You are listening to Heartland. I'm Rachel Otwell, and this is the segment and podcast where Kyle Isham and I talk to people from various walks of life about what spirituality means to them and how it's expressed in their daily lives. You're hearing a song from Mary Lattimore's new album. It's called At the Dam. This song is called Jaxine Drive. Mary has international recognition for her harp playing and for collaborating with artists like Thurston Moore of Sonic Youth. And that interview will be coming up after we talk to a Springfield artist. But before we get to any of that, Kyle, this is the first time our segment will be heard on air as well as online. You've spent many years studying world religion and developing your own spiritual practice. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Originally, I was drawn to Hinduism and studied that for many years. I spent some time in India and I lived in ashrams and I was doing a lot of meditation. And as I've gotten older over the last 10 years and just had more time to practice and develop my own thoughts and experiences with life, I've been drawn to a more grounded, earthy, experiential contact with spirituality, something that is very immediate and centered in each moment of our daily existence, and that it's about being able to live joyfully and to celebrate and to come together with others and to bring about a greater sense of community and development. Currently, I am at Trailhead Healing Arts Center in Springfield, Illinois. I offer Reiki sessions, I do tarot, and also counseling there.
Today we talk with a Springfield artist named Stanley Bly. His works combine realism and poetry he's written. They also have a dreamlike aspect to them. Stanley told us about finding beauty in the melancholy aspects of life, and he also deals with symbology and archetypes. And Kyle, you can speak to what exactly that means a little bit better than I can.
So an archetype is an energetic pattern found in everyone. It doesn't matter what religion or cultural background you come from. These can be things like our image of what a mother is or what a father is. And then these play out in our relationships and our work environment and even in how we are just able to connect to the earth itself.
Stanley Bly begins this conversation talking just about how he gets started with his artistic process.
I start out by writing out what something is. For instance, if I'm doing a man that's very rugged and worn, or a woman that's very, very beautiful in a work of art, I'm not looking at them from an emotional standpoint. I can't. Because if I want somebody else to get something out of it, how in the world are you going to be able to know my own memory unless I share it with you? You know, so I try and simplify things as much as I can to try and make them the representation that I want them to be.
And then when you talk about archetypes, when you do use faces of people that you do know from your own life, they have that archetypal element to them because it's not only someone you know, it's a character type. It's something that anyone could see, as in this painting you brought in. These are actual people in your world.
They are.
But yet there's also something universal that can be connected to them or projected on
them. Well, I try to. That's the ultimate goal, is to try and turn them into something more than what my memory is, to try and make them part of yours. The interesting thing to me about an archetype is it is a singular thing. So, you know, a vampire is an archetype. It's a stereotypical thing that we all understand exactly what it is. And when you look at people, generally they're not one. They're three or four different things, and those things can change depending upon situation. The neat thing for me about subjective art is that, you know, it becomes very personal to you as you create it. But for people to get there inside their own head, they need to let themselves go. They need to get past how somebody made something and let all those shields down. One of the best painters that ever did that was Jackson Pollock. You know, he created these splatter paintings, these drip paintings. And people always said, well, I can do that. But it's like looking in water. You know, you see something new every time. You see a sign. You see this thing that pops into your own head and you're not quite sure you know how it got there. But he did it. You see something new in that work every time you look at it. That's the transcendence that I think is beautiful in art. Just where your mind goes with it. Because it's just an image next to an image next to an image. This painting started out with somebody saying, let's all do landscapes. Just a beautiful landscape. How am I going to make a landscape and with my work, with all these people that I like to do, and something that's just purely beautiful? It came to me on a drive home from my paying job one day. I thought to myself, well, what do I find beautiful? So I jotted those things down. I said, I find working very hard your whole life for something beautiful. I find my daughter to be extraordinarily beautiful. In most senses, I think that all of these things that I find beautiful, they're like melancholy, you know? They're painfully beautiful in a way. But I think people understand that. You know, Buddha is a great example. It is a painfully beautiful thing that he is, that he struggled. Jesus Christ in the same sense.
Do you often include poetry that you've written in the work?
Yeah, I usually do. Mostly, my buddy, my best friend, he was my poetry teacher in college, and he's sort of the guy that taught me a lot about art. We were reading this poem called The Red Wheelbarrow. Basically, we read the poem. It's very short, but we wrote down what the word red meant. 40 words later, we moved on to the next word, and then the next word. So we're taking apart everything that something could possibly be. It's a new way to bring poetry to art.
What about living in the Midwest has influenced you?
I've never lived anywhere else. The landscape here is beautiful. Everybody says it's sort of boring But it's unbelievably beautiful, the vastness and the skyline there. You know, you look at a field at sunset or in the morning or midday, the point to which you can see changes throughout the day. It fades away because maybe the dust or the humidity levels. The work ethic here is awesome to me. When I'm done here, I'm going to go work.
So it sounds like there's not, for you, there's not any like one sense of spirituality or religion that you have that's driving this, but you are still in touch with kind of a deeper side of yourself.
I think spirituality is important. I don't think necessarily that labeling it in one sense is something you have to do. It's like looking at art. You don't know why you started thinking of that thing, but it's there. And I love everybody. I don't pick one.
You're listening to Heartland, our segment on spirituality and matters of the heart. Each episode, we speak with someone from the Central Illinois region, hence the name, Heartland, but we also want to broaden horizons and bring other perspectives into the mix. So now it's time for a musician interview. You're hearing the music of Mary Lattimore. She's a harpist who's collaborated with musicians and bands like Jarvis Cocker and the Arcade Fire. She recently released an album called At the Dam. The name was inspired by a Joan Didion essay, which we'll get into. And Kyle, you were the one who made me aware of Mary Lattimore and her music. Tell us what appealed to you about it.
In the interview, she talks about one of her albums called The Withdrawing Room, and she created this for a friend who's an artist and does a lot of drawing. And so this kind of is the essence of what her music is to me. It creates this space in which the listener is able to tap into those deeper, more introspective parts of their being. And then through this contact, a kind of natural creativity arises. And on this newest album, she drew from many experiences while taking a driving trip out west. And so that was a huge inspiration for the musical landscapes that she's creating in this work. So often I listen to her music while doing tarot readings or dream journaling or just wanting to kind of be able to access those deeper regions in my own psyche and unconscious.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And first off, I wanted to also thank you for getting me to start reading Joan Didion again.
Because
I had read how your album At the Dam had some connection with the Joan Didion essay.
Yeah. That was the first thing of hers that I had ever read, too. So that was sort of like my introduction.
That particular essay or the whole collection?
Just that whole collection.
Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to start off and just read the first sentence of that essay and then the last sentence of that first paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Since the afternoon in 1967 when I first saw Hoover Dam, its image has never been entirely absent from my inner eye. Frequently, I wonder what is happening at the dam this instant, at this precise intersection of time and space, how much water is being released to fill downstream orders, and what lights are flashing, and which generators are in full use, and which are just spinning free. And so what I love about this essay is that from the very beginning, there's kind of this thing that's almost like haunting her mind. There's that quality to your music as well. Was this something you were consciously playing off of?
You know, I made this record when I was on that road trip to California from Philadelphia. I just wanted to have sort of a travel souvenir a little bit, you know, because my memory is kind of bad. I don't know. I need sort of something to trigger the images back into my mind. So I wanted to make a record that reminded me of those beautiful places and that interesting time in my life.
And so do you consider your work to be specifically spiritual? I know you touch on themes of the sacred and the mysterious, but is it something that you think of doing?
I mean, I'm sort of like a person who tries to paint a picture to convey something sort of abstract, you know, like a memory or something that's not really concrete. I think about just being a human being and trying to find some way to connect with other people. Like my solo stuff is really personal and I feel like I am really alone when I'm making music. And so it's just sort of like I like to think about like an ET finger or something, like some little sort of thing that will hopefully touch some other like-minded person. You know, it's just my way of being connected and with the world.
And so what is it about the harp which allows for this kind of natural affinity and expression of these qualities?
The harp has so many, it has such a range of strings, and it's able to create lots of like different tones and shades of sound. Like you can play really low and really high, and you know, there are 47 strings and tons of keys that you can play, and you know, there are pedals and tons of options. You know, you can really evoke any kind of emotion and feeling through it because there's so many different options there. It's such a giant thing and you're holding it so close to your body that I feel like you have it's like kind of a direct transmission through this huge hollow sounding soundboard of the instrument.
And what first drew you to the harp?
My mom is a harpist. I grew up around harps and my mom has a lot of harpist friends and she leads a harp ensemble in North Carolina, where I'm from, and is a harpist with the symphony in Asheville, which is where I'm from. And she's had that position for maybe 30 years now. And I just sort of grew up with it, so it seemed really natural for me to start playing.
You mentioned being raised in Asheville, and we were wondering how the natural landscapes of your youth impact or influence your musical expression and connection to the natural world.
I am from it's a really beautiful place. Lots of famous natural beauty there. But and our family had this really beautiful little cabin in the mountains called Rest a While, and we go there when we were kids. I think a lot of this music, because I didn't start improvising and playing this kind of music until I was older, more recently. So I think it comes from like mental images of stranger places that I've been, the desert, things that aren't necessarily Asheville and being a child. It is a lot of nostalgia for trips, like trying to capture the fleetingness of the moment in an unusual place.
Well, Mary Lattimore, we've been sharing your music throughout this episode of Heartland, and the song people have been hearing is called Jackson Drive. I was wondering if you could set up, though, another song for us off the new album.
How about Otis Walks Into the Woods? That's a really sad song, though. I don't want to bum people out. But it's a song about my family lives on a farm in North Carolina, and we had this really great dog, and he was blind. His name was Otis. He actually disappeared into the woods outside of my family's home, and to pass away. I guess dogs instinctually go, you know, away from the pack to pass away sometimes, and he did that. And so I wrote him this piece about, you know, just it's like a little ode to him out, you know, just like going out into the woods. Thank you.
a lot of people, when they think about contemporary music, the harp is not one of the first instruments that would probably come to mind. And so given, as we can tell with the song, the somewhat solitary, meditative qualities of the harp, for your work and creative process, what's the balance between solitude and collaboration?
Hopefully everyone that I collaborate with has their own time to sort of learn their instrument, focus on their instrument by themselves. It's like collaboration is, to me, it's just two or more individuals coming together with their own personal language and then trying to learn their language and to see the way that their mind works, and they're trying to do the same thing. When you're doing that, you have to be really vulnerable too, because you're showing someone how your mind works. I think that's like very personal and intimate connection, which I really love.
And so personally, then, what brings you inspiration? What other sort of mediums and artists or writers influence the themes and moods that you explore?
I really like James Turrell, his light installations. There's an abstract expressionist watercolor painter named Paul Jenkins that I really love. And like Brian Eno and this guy William Basinski, I really love him. And sort of thoughtful layered transmissions of abstract feelings, but, you know, really thought out, kind of like Joan Didion a little bit, you know, where she's capturing a mood and a vibe, but she has, which is kind of, you know, loose.
That was Mary Lattimore talking about her music and how she uses it to express her thoughts and encounters with what it means to be alive.
You've been listening to the Heartland podcast, recorded in the NPR Illinois studios in Springfield. If this is the first episode you've heard, you can catch up with the other few episodes we have online. In them, you can find conversations with Catholic Dominican sisters who run a farm. It's right outside of Springfield, and it also serves as a convent, and it's open to the public for retreats and as a place of refuge and renewal in nature. And we also spoke with a retired Episcopal bishop who made his way into Springfield. His name is John Shelby Spong. That was quite interesting. Thanks for listening to Heartland. I'm Rachel Otwell.
And I'm Kyle Isham.